comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks. Welcome to the show. Wherever you happen to be, and whoever you are, welcome to talk radio like nowhere else on earth. This is the show where you matter. And one of the things that we do because you matter is we publish a newsletter each week. It is called The K-Files. It has inside information from the show. And it has links to interesting videos, links to interesting articles, and always a free download. And there's really no reason, since it's absolutely free, for you to be in the dark. So just go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and click the link that says K-Files, and subscribe. Then you will be in the know. And that's a good place to be. Well, the NASA chief collided with some senators today, and it was pretty interesting. Now, tomorrow night is going to be open line, and I'm going to talk about it somewhat in depth right at the beginning of the show. But it was pretty interesting because, you know, here's the NASA administrator appointed to that position, of course, by the president. The president says we're not going to the moon. He has a proposed budget in front of the senators and in front of Congress that reflects what the president has said. Cancellation of the Constellation program. That's the building of the spacecraft that's supposed to replace the shuttle and take us on to the moon. And, you know, the president says we're not going. There's no money in his proposed budget for going back to the moon or going to Mars. And so there were some pretty hot exchanges because there are senators that are very much in favor of space exploration. And one of the basic things, one of the big things they hit him between the eyes with is go somewhere, pick a place and a specific place and go somewhere. And one senator said this budget is too ambiguous. You don't say what it is you're going to be doing in space. Yeah, you're basically an agency without a mission. And he said, I'll fight against this budget or anything like it with everything I have. Well, I am absolutely delighted that NASA hit that brick wall. And I hope they hit nothing but brick walls as they try to turn into a sort of a jello form of their former self. And, you know, frankly, I think if we're not going to be actually exploring space, then we need to just get out of the space business, quit pretending. But, you know, if we're actually going back to the moon, if we're going to Mars, if we're actually going to do what it is that the majority of the American people want, that would be novel, wouldn't it? Then we have to have manned space exploration. I'll be back right after this break with James Horak. every once in a while, we meet someone, either in person, by email, or video chat, some way, we meet someone that's truly unique. And it is certainly the case with James Horak. There is, I think, no debate for those of you who heard him when he was my guest last week. James Horak didn't just rock boats. He rocked the whole world. And he is really, really one of the most interesting people I have ever had the privilege of meeting. He is my guest this evening again. And I will tell you that the reports I got from our internet affiliate stations, you know, we're carried by internet radio stations, and we're carried by AM stations, FM stations, and so forth. Well, the internet radio stations, of course, have the ability to look at their server statistics and see exactly how many people were tuned in. And the reports that I got from my internet affiliate stations while James was on with us last time were absolutely through the roof. And I expect they will be again. James, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. I appreciate being here.
You know, James, you shared with us some things last week that really, really were different from the sort of perspectives we normally hear. For those who were not with us, those who didn't get to hear it, I'd like for us to do just a little thumbnail kind of presentation, just a real quick presentation of kind of what we talked about last week, and then we'll move on. But I had asked you to come on and talk with us about these things, whatever they may be, that have been discovered to be in orbit around our sun, close to our sun, as a matter of fact. And they were discovered in NASA's photographs from the SOHO satellite. They are very large, whatever they are. And I had asked you to explain to us what those objects are. You told us, and then you told us how you know that. So just briefly tell us again what those objects are and how it is that you know what they are.
I'll refer to them by the name Dr. Norman Berggren gave them when he discovered them in the rings of Saturn and wrote a book which he published in 1986, The Ringmakers of Saturn. Out of deference to him, I'll apply that name to them, EMVs, electromagnetic vehicles. These are objects I have an affinity with. I am interrelated with them. They do not have a consciousness like anything like the human mind. They are task-driven. They can be any size. In the sun right now, what you see is the size of the North American continent. And they react with the sun. They are necessary to providing a planet with what it needs to begin to be a seedbed for life, especially sentient life. They protect planets that have been so chosen for this cycle, this beginning, from discharges from their fusion star. The fusion star, the sun, is a life-giving, necessary component, but at the same time, it can wipe out any good that's been achieved in a breath. And we are protected by them farming the energy in the sun, dispersing it, not allowing it to build up in a aimed towards the planets in our solar system in the form of coronal ejections, which will decimate a planet's side facing the sun when it hits instantly. Now, scientists know this, not just astrophysicists, but across the board, most scientists, physical scientists, know this. There is a anomaly involved in how we can be in proximity with a fusion star and yet still survive to the lineage that we have to enjoy the culture that we've reached and have that longevity to survive it.
James, let me ask you, we discussed this a bit before the show, but do you by any chance have any other program open on your computer right now?
Do I have any other program?
Yeah.
Yours.
Okay. It's interfering with your telephone, so if you will, just close that down. And we'll be able to continue. Don't close the computer down. Just that other program.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Now these electromagnetic vehicles. Do you have any idea what is the origin of them? You know, where do they come from? Who built them?
I can't tell you. I can tell you the. I can tell you what I know. I can tell you a number of things about lineages that I'm familiar with on Earth. I can tell you a number of things about the patterns that these objects respond to. I can tell you their energy sources. I can tell you a great deal, but the important thing to note about these things is the magnitude of wonder they represent. They, if you put this in terms of science today on this planet, it just doesn't wash. It can't be examined for what it is. It can only be ignored because conventional science has ignored anomaly and its meaning for so long that they have their own texture, and this just does not mix with...
Okay, so their origin is not known to you, right?
No.
Okay. You did tell us that the extraterrestrials, extraterrestrial beings that do fly spaceships are aware of them, they know about them, and they refer to them as the hand of God.
Something like that. They refer to them, however they may specifically refer to them, depending upon the culture. They are observed with awe.
Okay, but they're not afraid of them.
No. No more than Mr. Fortson was afraid of the craft flying over him of such vast proportions and dimensions.
Mm-hmm. All right, now these electromagnetic vehicles... in our last conversation, I asked, and you answered, I asked if they are a machine or are they living? And I believe you told me that they are living.
Yeah.
Okay, and they are not a solid body, but they are energy.
They are solid.
Oh, they are solid.
Oh, yes.
Okay. But how then can they change their size and their shape?
Well, that's a very ticklish question to try and compose an answer. But the physics that even ETs observe in many cases are not going to work in mankind on Earth's understanding. I mean, that's evident. Now, imagine something being so far advanced beyond that that it's just as difficult for ET to comprehend as it is for mankind on Earth to comprehend ET technology at a certain level. Now, you might comprehend by the crashed vehicles and the attempts to recover technology that they salvage from these vehicles, you might comprehend that level of technology. But there are ETs who don't have crashes. There are ETs that are so much above that level can't comprehend them.
So we're really, it's not like we're on the bottom of the totem pole. We haven't even gotten to the totem pole yet.
You're not on the bottom of the totem pole. You have potentials that perhaps don't exist anywhere else. You're not on the bottom of the totem pole. No. It's as a species, Earth-based humans are magnificent. And I'm sure there's envy, and there's a certain amount of fear in communities from other places, people from other places. I sort of object to calling these aliens and speaking of them as if they were so removed from your reality. They're not. They're people. People from elsewhere. I've lived here long enough and been through enough to have as much awe and as much respect and as much love for people on this planet as anywhere else. Maybe more.
Well, see, now that opens the door for me to bring up the question that I got into last week about, you know, where are you from?
My home that I know of has always been with the EMVs. It's going back as far as I can. I came from some culture or civilization and was taken and have been for a very long time what I am now.
Now, let me...
With the ETs, I'm not.
I'm sorry?
As far as being associated with the EMTs, I am not.
EMTs.
The ETs, pardon.
ETs, yeah. Okay, well now, let me kind of inject a comment here for the audience, especially those who were not with us last time, and this is all brand new to them. When you hear something on this show that is outside of your norm, then we have achieved exactly what we set out to achieve when I pushed the button to go on the air. If all you ever hear is the same old stuff you already heard, how are you going to grow? You stagnate. Now, I'm going to give a very quick example. Our producer, Bob. Now, Bob is the most stagnant individual I know. He's a good friend of mine. I like Bob. He's a very good friend of mine. Bob and I have served together overseas. He's former international police as well and former head of security at two different embassies that we had and still have. So he's a very good friend of mine, but he is the most stagnant individual I know. He doesn't like anything he hasn't already tried. One wonders how he ever tried anything past milk. If he's never tried a certain kind of food, he's not going to. And he'll tell you, I don't like it. How do you know? Because I never had it. And there are people who are that way about listening to information. I never heard anything like that before. Okay. And? Well, that goes against everything I ever heard. And your point? The earth being round goes against everything science told us was true at one point. The earth in orbit around the sun goes against everything science told us was true at one point. And, you know, the fact is, there's very little in this universe that we really know. We make great assumptions and issue doctor's degrees based on those assumptions that very often turn out to be dead wrong. So listening to new information is how we grow. And nobody's asking you to believe anything. Just hear it, think about it, make your own decisions about whether you think it's correct information or not. Now, the reason I say that is because I'm now going to ask you this question. James, you say that you have been here in this culture long enough, here on Earth, so that you have grown to love Earth-based humans as much as any other people anywhere else. Do you have memories of being elsewhere other than Earth?
Yes.
Other planets?
Other galaxies.
Okay. Now, you see, right at this point is where a lot of folks would say, this guy needs pills. I don't think so.
I'd enjoy some pills every once in a while.
We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We are talking this evening with James Horak. And James, when we went away for break, I stated something that really is just stating the obvious. And that is, within our culture, whenever you say something like that you have memories of being on other planets and other galaxies, immediately there are people that say, this guy needs some pills. And that would not be a surprise or a shock to you that people, some people would have that reaction. Does that bother you in any way?
Not at all. I expect that. It's healthy skepticism. Mm-hmm. I've never been prepared to come forth as I have. I've never even discussed 90% of what I have already here with any particular person to the extent I have before. The one thing that emboldened me was NASA's images of the objects in the sun. I don't think a lot of people are fully advised to appreciate the magnitude of wonder they represent. If they were, I don't think you'd be so much of a sleep to listen to me and want to hear more. But one of the things that I have that might explain things a little bit better is that after our last program together, I received three emails from people that were interested in asking me some questions. And one was from a lady in the United Kingdom who I struck some cards with, and it ended with her mentioning that she had children, and she pleaded with me on their behalf. So I did respond to all three emails, but hers in particular, because it touched me. Okay. And I would like to read my response to her, because it will settle a number of questions that come to mind by people that are hearing this now. Okay. Could I do that?
Sure, go ahead.
Humanity on this planet is dynamic for all its faults. Great writers, poets, artists, and performers taking the expression of their genre constantly to new heights. That lineage is too precious to lose. But poised above all this are the mindless power grabbers who won't be content until they possess even the souls of those they've already begun to plunder in mind and body. If you only knew how much effort I've put into averting the madness that would turn a world into a place where no one would wish to live. To have seen it over and over again, but like some residue of the past, kept it all in this inevitable cycle, knowing full well this is not the way it has to be. You may very well have a connection to many events and places remote to this period. That may come from times where your subconscious is allowed to participate with the conscious, when the systemic fear the conscious has of its subconscious counterpart somewhat abates. This is not a natural state of mind and has become a feature of earthbound humanity, a counterproductive one. Because of it, you've been entrained to sublimate dichotomy and cannot think of good without evil, peace without war. The children are the most of all prizes, yet they are protected least. You are taught to protect them adequately is to be too protective, for a father to be so, to be too controlling. That should tell you this inevitable that has been designed, and that you must go backwards to find the right path from the point where the wrong one was taken. I was saddened to have to answer that ETs are indifferent, long ago having given up this experiment. Still, there are those among them that display their craft and retain a hope that what they possess will example better things are obtainable. Actually, I do not resign to any decision. I merely lose the strength to withstand others making it, as I am pulled back to my source, leaving the field of battle. Perhaps you can understand, I didn't feel trying to express this on the show would be successful. On UFO updates are a few of my articles under my name. You might be interested in them and find they strike chords with you. There is genetic knowledge, and you will have it after the field the mind actually is incorporates with the soul shortly after death. I've tried to develop an awareness of this process in others here many times, but always failed. The few ET civilizations that have gone on to a field energy state of being, and almost always separate entirely from those that haven't. The civilization that did succeed beyond this point became part of the extended community many ET worlds share. You know them as Blondes. But that lineage is so deep in the past, they themselves have forgotten how close they came to this very point. Though I have dealt with the ET extended community, I'm not part of it, but associated purely with the EMVs, sometimes their liaison with the ETs. Of late, ETs are disgusted with me having gone native with the people here, so that you might appreciate my place in things. Their memories are short, and always that breeds arrogance. The die is not cast. Do not fall to despondency. In all this drama, something might emerge from among you to carry the day, something that might cut away the disease there. All the potential is there. I've always fathomed it, so I have stayed. Worlds exist where every life is regarded as precious, and no one wants to raise a hand to another. Persist on the hope to see this, and don't fear the worst. Even it will bring wonders to you. But don't reach for that before your time. We all have discoveries to make as each expression of existence plays out. Wise men have told you, no task too great will be put upon you. That means that instruments have been placed throughout the cosmos to prevent any soul from being robbed of its integrity. I know that you know what that means, and you must as well know that only God is capable of such a grand scale. Most of all, nothing has any meaning or purpose to survive that has no moral core.
Very good. Now let me ask you a question that perhaps you will feel is, I don't know, I won't even say how you may take this. But this is based on some emails that I got that I would say 99.9% of the emails I got after our first show, and my inbox was flooded with email. 99.9% truly was very enthusiastic, very favorable towards you and what you had to say. I did have a small percentage of emails that were, I would say negative, but not angry, but negative. And I felt that they had misunderstood something you said. So I want to clarify that. When you said that you are the person who decides, you're the one that makes the decision as to whether this civilization currently on Earth takes the next step up or gets plowed under. That was pretty much of a shock to people, and it happened. You said it right at the end of the show, and so we didn't really have time to get into that. But I think that these handful of people that sent me some email that was a little bit negative misunderstood, and so I want to clarify that. Are you saying that you are a modern-day Jesus Christ? Are you the Messiah? Or are you something else?
Something else.
Okay, so you made no claims to be a modern-day Jesus. You made no claims to be a Messiah.
No.
Well, and see, I didn't take it that way either, I think some folks did. Now, there is an example for those who sent me those emails. There is an example of this kind of an arrangement. If you go back and read in your Bible, the story of Lot. And what you have is you have Abram. The Lord God says to Abram, I'm going to wipe out Sodom and Gomorrah. And knowing that his nephew was there, Abram said, well, wait, now if I can find you 50 men that are righteous in these towns, will you spare them? And he said, yes. And then he keeps backing, I think it was 50, but anyway, he keeps backing down. He finally gets down to 10. If I can find you 10, will you spare these towns? And the Lord God says to him, yes. And he couldn't find 10. And so then when the day came for the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, the Lord God comes walking down the road with two other men. Abram recognizes this one of them, as being the Lord God. The other two are the angels that went over to Sodom and Gomorrah. And those angels, at a time appointed, are the ones that did the destruction. So you had Abram standing there saying, trying to hold back the flood water, or actually not the flood water, but the atomic blast or whatever it was that happened. And he did hold it back for a while. Was Abram saying that he was the Christ? No. Was he saying that he was a Messiah? No. And so you have an example of sort of that kind of thing right there in your Bible. Now, let me move beyond that. I wanted to clarify that. Let me move beyond that and ask about something you mentioned. You said that you know about the patterns that these EMVs respond to. What do you mean by the patterns, and what do you mean by response?
Mankind looks for signs in order to interpret what prophecies they've been given by seers. Well, the EMVs are sensitive to hydrogen bomb blasts. That registers to a society that begins turning on its own, to diseases that are made to kill, that are grown in laboratories, to misrepresentation across the board of the efficacy of medical treatments that are designed to kill, to on and on and on, but most of all, to the breakup of the nuclear family.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll come back to the breakup of the nuclear family right after this. We're talking with James Horak this evening, and he was with us last week, and we're delighted that he's back with us again this evening. James, you said the thing they respond to, these EMVs that are in orbit around our sun, the thing they respond to most particularly are would be the breakup of the nuclear family, and I assume by that, you mean the breakup of the family unit, as we understand it.
Well, that sort of thing, but the hydrogen bomb that was detonated was a turning point, and it brought a lot of serious attention to Earth, as you probably fathom by the more varied types of vehicles that the UFOs have displayed themselves as. The most interesting and compelling flap was in Brazil in the 70s at Colares, which is an Amazon Delta island. And that went on for months. These ETs were from a highly developed culture, civilization, technology. They were probing. They were new here. They were probing, making initial study of mankind here. That's why they were there so long, for months. They were studied by the military while the flap was ongoing. They probed just about everyone in the village, and even the doctor who was in attendance. There was a contact that was made with the officer in charge of the military group that was studying and investigating. He made many drawings, and he took a lot of photographs. They were well equipped, and the event changed him. When he retired from the Brazilian military, he decided to come forth. History Channel has given an extensive documentary on this, even with pictures of his talking, being interviewed before ufologists in Brazil. It changed him so emphatically and profoundly that he could not, after he divulged the information, he committed suicide shortly after. I don't in any way believe that there was a conspiracy to kill him for what he did or anything like that. He had come to the end of his rope. He had seen something that he couldn't be gratified knowing fully enough. And this happens to a number of people within deep intelligence operations who come in touch with this sort of thing. They are left high and dry, emotionally, psychically, psychologically, and hung out. They want to go that next level up to acquire the overview to put it together, and they're denied that. I know of several cases, one very close to where I live, and this man was the intelligence liaison for the Edward Teller and his group as they were developing the hydrogen bomb. And I know a great deal about this man. I have a number of belongings of his that are spectacular. As he quit because he couldn't go up to the next level, and he had hoped that that was the top and where all these secrets would become clear to him, and he felt he had earned that right.
Why are they denied going the next level? And who denies them?
In this case, I think that it was the group that has the ultimate power in this country as far as the military-industrial complex, and that's what is referred to as MJ-12. Now, of course, I'm sure they change their name, just like NASA changes the numbers and the classification of images to make it confusing for people to find when there are references to it.
All right. Now, does MJ-12 know that next level? Have they been to that next level?
They know a lot. They can't put it together, of course. They don't. But they do not want you to know that. They don't want anybody to know that there are babes in the woods too, and that they're under the thumb of something they think is the ultimate key or answer, and it's not even a start. There have been members that have had consciences and care for humanity, truly, but they end up dead. Forrestal was one.
Have you personally known any of the MJ-12 members?
Not as I am. Working through someone else.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to know something, I can find it. And there are all manner of ways I can do that. I can tell you things right now that will cause you to have dead air within 15 seconds.
Don't do that.
I know. I'm not.
I have enough problem just with the stuff we put out.
I know.
Let's talk about MJ-12 for a moment. There are people that say they never existed, that it's all fiction. There are people that say it is absolutely real. I have talked with people on the air who have known personally one or two of the MJ-12s, or say they did. I think there's good, strong evidence to support the idea that they did in fact exist and that they do exist, although operating under a different name now.
Yes.
And but let's go back to MJ-12 for a moment. They are rumored to be the group in control, as you mentioned, of all the secrecy around UFOs, extraterrestrials, etc., and you know all the attendant various information that links up with that. What do you think would be the impact if they decided it's time to come clean? It's time for disclosure. Do you think that there would be widespread suicides? And the reason, here's why I ask this. You're talking about people who have come into contact with this knowledge and then could not handle life beyond that, could not handle going on because of what they knew. All right, so do you think it would have that effect on a widespread basis?
No. No, I don't.
Okay, well, why? If it has that effect on this guy that was intelligence liaison for Edward Teller's group, if it has that effect on him and on a number of other people...
It didn't have that effect on him. He knew enough to be dismayed. He knew enough to be awed. He knew enough to be afraid of what they compelled as secrecy and protocol. It wasn't the awareness of E.T. It was an awareness that there was a larger picture he didn't have access to.
All right, we'll be back right after this. Don't go away. This gets deeper. Welcome back, and those of you joining us just now in this second hour, you have truly, genuinely missed a universe of information. Shame on you. I know you had to work late, and you couldn't help it, but wow, what a first hour. We're talking with James Horak. We continue, and I'll open the phone lines in just a little bit. When I do open the phone lines, folks, jot the numbers down so you don't forget them, okay? James, we were talking about MJ-12.
Yes.
And you said these guys know about something that they think is the ultimate, and it's not even the beginning. How can you say that? How do you know that?
I can tell by their projects. I can tell by what they're not permitting out. They're hiding their own inadequacy to come to terms with what's going on in their view.
Among these extraterrestrials, now in the last show you told us the difference between extraterrestrials and EBEs.
Yes.
The EBEs being the Greys, and they are basically android. They are biological robots.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you told us that difference, but then with another guest, and you and I have discussed this other guest, Aaron McCollum. Aaron talked about people that are creating essentially that. They look human. They're creating these things that they look human. They are flesh. They are biological, but they have no souls. So what can you tell us about that? Anything?
You have a word. It's called abomination. It has religious connotations, but it also has a very precise application here. These are abominations. They are abominations because there's soul tampering involved in this. Now, Mr. McCollum has a sense of moral direction. That's why he's taking the risks he's taking, and that's why he's pushing himself to recall the memories that have been removed from his mind. And I applaud him. He is very brave. I trust him because of some of the things that I saw in this videotape that was sent me just today.
All right. Now, we're going to open the phones in just a moment, but I want to get a comment on one last thought here before I invite the audience to step in with their questions and comments. And that's this, just an observation on my part. That based on everything that you say, if we take the whole thing and just back away from it and take a look at it, it looks to me like these EMVs that are in orbit around the sun act in the universe very much like white blood cells act in our bodies. When they identify something that's not good, that's what they try to control and, if necessary, do away with it. White blood cells do that. They find an infection in the body. They attack it in order that the body will continue to live and be healthy. It seems to me that that's sort of what you've described as the task of these EMVs as they function and work in the universe. Am I off track, or is that pretty much on track?
No. Task-driven.
Okay, but I don't understand. Does that mean that they identify things?
Can I compliment you?
I'm sorry?
Mr. Smith, can I compliment you?
Well, okay, I guess.
You're pretty bright. You're pretty bright.
So that's on track then?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
It's disease at all levels, spiritual, physical, moral.
Okay. I'm going to open up the telephone lines and invite our audience to join us with questions or comments. Ladies and gentlemen, the telephone number, the main telephone number here in the studio is 623-444-5889. If you're in the USA or Canada and you need to call me on the toll-free line, you can do so. It is 888-223-4599. Let me give them to you again. The main number, the one we prefer you call us on, 623-444-5889. The toll-free number, 888-223-4599. And, of course, if you're not in the USA and you are not in Canada and you don't want to make an international long-distance call, you may send us a flash message. And you do that by going to my website, scroll down, you'll see where it says flash message. Just click on that, and you can send your question or comment to me that way. Now, my website is kevinsmithshow.com, all right? All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Ryan in Washington here.
Hi, Ryan.
I just had a couple quick questions.
Right.
One, how do the objects around the sun not overheat since it's really close to the sun and it's got to be pretty hot around there? The second question is, do you have any writings or have you written a book that people can get their hands on so that we can read some of your material in written form? And I'll just take it off the air.
All right. Thanks for the call.
I appreciate those questions very much. Now, there's a completely different physics here involved. Many years ago, I started on the theory of the fusion of metals. And I started on it because I had a friend that wanted to go to Stanford University and get a double E degree. And so he did, his grades weren't as good as they could have been. So somebody asked him to write a project proposal because he wanted to go into theory. And so I said, well, okay, I can help you there. So I said, one day computers will be adequate enough that they'll be able to control the conditions in a pressure chamber. And when that happens, when they can do it real close, you take a piece of metal that you want to repair or alloy better or whatever you want to do with it, stick it in this chamber, bring the heat up so high, so fast, that it goes from a solid state to a gas without the intermediary liquid state. Then, when it's at a gas, your pressure is holding its form. Then you anneal it with whatever you want to add to improve its temper or to improve its grain, whatever you want to do with it. And then you bring it back down the same way, where it passes from a gas to a solid without going through the liquid stage, where it begins to anneal out. Then, theoretically, if this is perfected, you could theoretically produce a metal with heat coefficient, an internal heat coefficient of zero. You could walk through the sun with a suit made of it.
Wow. Wow.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Well, now, what about your writings?
Beg your pardon?
His second question was about your writings. Caller, just hang on. I'll get to you in just a second. He asked you about, have you written anything?
Yes. Only thing I have available right now, I've been on all kinds of forums and written a lot of stuff and all that, but the only thing that I have really to say, well, if you want to read something, on UFO Digest, which a friend of both of ours is one of the editors,
mm-hmm.
Robert Morningstar. I have at least three articles, maybe four, that you can read. If you go to UFO Digest and you go their search engine and type my name in, it should bring up what articles I've written there.
Okay, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin from Beaverton.
Hello, Kevin.
I was wondering if the EMVs are like are one of their tasks is like the transportation for souls, like in reincarnation.
Well, they're a community of souls. You can't imagine the joy there. You can't imagine the exchange of. I don't want to tell you a lot about it because that's for you to discover. That's your discovery is a wonderful thing, and I don't want to rob you of it. I've robbed enough already.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Kevin? I guess he's already gone. Okay. That brings up the idea then of reincarnation and the question of, is reincarnation is a theory. It is a theological theory. That many religions have developed. Or we could say it's a point of theology. So, then part of your discovery is that real? Is it reincarnation?
Oh, certainly. I won't say that it's a procedure. It's purely an optional potential.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, by all means.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Rex from Miami.
Hello, Rex. It's been a while since I've heard from you, Rex.
Well, this definitely brought me out.
I'm glad it did.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask, James, following up on your analogy with the white blood cell idea of what the EMVs do, so when you think about Earth now, and I would agree that things are pretty bad, pretty badly managed now, so let's assume, you know, the groups that are behind the scenes that call them like Illuminati or whoever that really run things, let's say they were like a half of 1% of the population or something, just for talking about. Wouldn't it be better for the EMVs to wipe out the source of the problem, like that half of 1%, rather than restart civilization, like you'd mentioned before, with the 5 or 6 times that Earth is restarted?
I would. That would be far preferable to me, but it doesn't really solve the problem, does it?
Why would it not solve the problem?
Because the potential for it to come back, you have revolutions. Within a generation, every gain from that revolution that's positive is lost because elitism comes back and replaces the absolutism that the revolution removed with something even worse.
Is elitism genetically encoded into us?
I can tell you where the problem is, but of course, that's complicated, but it goes right back to a divided consciousness. The ambivalence. On one hand, you will have an objective, and down the road, you relent and modify it, and it's like Congress. Before it's over, a good thing becomes so corrupted by compromise that it's absolutely not going to do the people that it was intended to help any good at all.
Boy, that's the truth. Rex, does that answer your question?
That's your history. If I could say that I had found, and here is your parable from Sodom and Gomorrah, if I could say that I had found one example of correcting the flaw in humanity on this planet's consciousness, it'd be a whole new ball game. But I can't.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried. You have no idea how I've tried to find a way to make people try to build a model of unified consciousness, and how miserably I failed. I worked with several people, and I've had them to the point where they're fed up with being ambivalent. They're fed up with this weakness, this frailty, and somehow they fall back into that ambivalence.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, I will say this, and I don't care whether people take this metaphysically or literally or as a leap in physics.
Mm-hmm.
If you perfect a model of anything, if you perfect it, even if it's only in your mind, you can manifest it.
I think that's true. I do think that's true. Rex, does this answer your question?
Yeah, just another quick question, if I
all
could.
Right.
What were the previous civilizations on Earth before us that were wiped out and started over?
Oh, there's so much to tell on that. Shall I tell you about the last one?
Yeah, go ahead.
There's a reason why Mars is, compared to Earth, a dead planet. for a planet to have the vitality Earth has, it must have a moon in a certain proportion to the planet's size. When it orbits, it's like driving the armature in a generator with the core and the molten mantle. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is very important because the last civilization tried to utilize this in a bad way, this set of physics. And they were magnificent. They were very extensive, not as extensive as what's on the Earth today. But you find their artifacts in different places, and they're just regarded as anomaly and tossed in tow sacks when they're found in fields. And I've seen a number of them. Used to collect them, but they were wiped out in 21 days. 21 days. By themselves.
From the use of the wrongful use of technology.
They were trying to use the moon as a spaceship.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I tell you what, we're going to take a call. I've made a note. And we're going to take this call, and then I've got a question about the moon as a spaceship. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening. This is Chris from Michigan.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, Kevin.
Is this the Chris from Michigan that I met at Sedona?
No, sir.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I would have liked to have gone there, but I didn't get a chance to get out there.
Okay. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Mr. Horak, I would like to just tell you, first of all, this is so fascinating to me, and in some ways kind of disturbing on others, and I just kind of want to give you my common man perspective. I'm a father and a husband, and I get up every day and I go to work, and I'm part of the big machine, and we pray to the Lord God in our own way as our family unit, and we keep our friends and our family close, and that's pretty much all we got to go on with the daily grind of everything that's part of being a human being on this planet as it is. But when I hear you talk about the things you're talking about, I almost kind of feel like what can I do as just an individual in this big picture of things, when it almost kind of seems like the pieces are already laid out anyway? What change can I possibly affect for the better? I'm just trying to live as it is. Do you understand what I'm saying by that?
Oh, I do. I do, and I have neighbors like you. They know nothing about any of what I'm talking about here, and I would never try and communicate it with them. They're not looking in this direction. Obviously, you are. You would be listening to this show. But what I would tell you is that whatever happens, it's not the end. I would tell you that it, you know, things could happen, good things. One of my hopes is that the people that are inside so many of these covert black ops operations will start challenging, will start dropping out, will start whistleblowing, will start doing a number of things, having found some assonance with me and having struck some chords with them. I know that there are people that are dissatisfied, that know things and could speak up, and if we give them protection, if we honor them, if we take these people that are put in place to attack them, to try to destroy them. If we put them in their place and keep them from harming these brave souls that come forward and do this, if we find ways of encouraging them, this will open up like a ripe watermelon. But we have to have the courage to do that, and we have to start looking at realities. Mr. Smith, can I speak about our present president?
Well, I'll tell you what. We don't do politics here. But beyond that, we're only 15 seconds away from break. So we'll talk about that during the break and see if we can do that, okay? All right, folks, we're going to step away for a break. Let me say to Chris in Michigan, thanks for the call, and we'll be back right after this. My guest this evening is James Horak, and James and I talked during the break, and what he's going to say really doesn't get into the politics of things. So, James, go ahead with it.
I just wanted to say, sound economic theory, even some of the approaches that I'm not really very fond of, could restore the economic stability of the United States, a few hard decisions, within 2 years, and we could have the production, markets and jobs and industry that we had 20 years ago in 2 years. But the things that would have to be done to do this would require Congress people, men and women, to become economists. And they're not. They're not even capable of probably balancing their checkbooks.
Well, Charlie Rangel says, you know, that the taxes are too complicated for him, and he writes the tax law. The head of the IRS says he has to have his taxes prepared by a professional because he doesn't understand it all. I would...
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you, when is the last time you heard balance of payments deficit, that phrase?
Oh, it's been a long time.
That's right. How about a protective tariff?
Even longer.
Well, there are reasons these things existed in the past, and they existed when the United States was economically, industrially, socially strong. And now we're not. Those things don't exist. Maybe it's time we see the connection.
It's time for us to see a lot of connections. All right, I'm going to open the phone lines again in just a moment, but I got to ask this question. It came up when you were talking about the previous civilization just before this one, and they tried to use the moon as a spaceship, and it destroyed them within 21 days. All right, now here's the question.
No, that's not exactly what I was trying to say. When they tampered with the relationship that the Earth observes with its moon, that makes Earth alive. When they did that, things started going wrong, and the corrections that they made led to a series of events, and this was over a period of years, that when the catastrophe began, within 21 days, their life on the planet, except in the sea, was obliterated.
Okay, now here's the question. We know from photographs that have come back from the moon that there are things on the surface of the moon that appear to be artifacts of some ancient intelligent species. Is that the are those the ruins of or remnants of some of that previous civilization, or are they ET?
They're both. They're both there. I'd have to know what structures you're talking about, but there's a crystal spire there that's ET.
Okay. All right, I'm going to open the telephone lines again, and we're going to take a call, and then I'm going to get to some of these flash messages that have come in from around the world. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Stefan from Quebec City.
Hello, Stefan.
Hi. Fantastic show, and it's good to have Mr. Horak on again. I was wondering, Mr. Horak, is there a connection between the pyramids and these extraterrestrial or these energy-based vehicles around the sun?
In a convoluted way, yes. Yes. In the Pyramid of Cheops, there's a gallery, and there wasn't just a telescope in that.
Okay, what was in it?
An instrument kind of like what we use to read gases and their range to determine the elements in the sun, things like that. And the connection between the ancient sciences and what the Egyptians had came by virtue of a secret priesthood, and this priesthood continued and had a separate culture that today we know as the Etruscan. Now we are told that the Etruscan writings in their texts and their scrolls, and the scrolls exist, are in a language that can't be translated. But I'll tell you a big secret. The Etruscan language was Latin, and they gave it to the Romans.
So why do people in charge of these scrolls say they can't be translated?
They don't want you to know what's in them. The same reason that the papyrus that was in the Tutankhamun's tomb has never been produced.
What's in them?
Sealed tomb. It was there. What did Carter and Lord Cardovan do with it? And why?
And I'm sorry, Kevin, is Mr. Horak saying that Tutankhamun was buried inside the Great Pyramid?
No.
Beg your pardon?
Okay.
He wanted to know, are you saying Tutankhamun was buried inside the Great Pyramid? And I said no.
No. I'm saying that his tomb was sealed. No, he was buried in the Valley of the Kings.
But what you, the focus of what you're saying is there was a papyrus in that tomb, and it disappeared.
Yes. Yes, I can tell you in a book, The Testaments of Time, I believe. It's either Testaments of Time or God's Graves and Scholars. There's an account by a reporter who was sitting in the director of antiquities office when Carter came in to raise the devil about his license, his permit, being revoked by the director of the Department of Archaeology in the museum at Cairo. And he comes into the office and he's raising the devil, and he's saying he had been caught shipping artifacts, in effect looting the tomb, and shipping artifacts covertly.
Mm-hmm.
He had been caught by reporters. And so he comes in raising the devil, and this reporter wrote an account of what was said. He said, how would you like for the Jews to know, to have that exposed? And the curator of the museum, who is also director of anthropology, archaeology, whatever the Egyptian government called him, who granted permits, threw an inkwell at Carter's head. Now, the heirs of Lord Cardigan claim that they never found it or seen it or whatever, but that conversation and that incident kind of belies that. But that's, you know, how they suppress the Dead Sea Scrolls for 40 years.
All right, we have another caller online, so let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello. Hello, Mr. Horak.
Hello.
Yes, you made a couple comments I'd like to... You mentioned a little bit about reincarnation, and I was wondering, is there going to be a time, and I haven't come to terms whether, you know, it's fully operational, this reincarnation, but what I would be concerned about is having my memory wiped clean again. Such as when I came here, if I came here this time, you know, I can't remember nothing. Is there going to come a time when that's not going to be?
Yeah, a unified mind has access to the genetic pool of knowledge that is in everyone. And that's limitless.
But how can I get a hold of it?
On access to it, it's going to happen to you when you die.
But then when I'm reborn again, I lose it again?
Yeah. When you come back, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good and bad. That's good and bad. But you'll regain it. When you die, the soul and mind combine. And that completes, you know, let's say it completes a circuit. I mean, that's a very trivial example, but let's say that.
Okay, thanks. And one more, if I may.
Sure.
Is all, I'm going to say it, and maybe you'll have to ask me what I mean, but is all mankind going to be, I want to say make it or saved, however, whatever term you want to make it?
Yes, yes. Every soul is precious, just like every life should be precious and is evidently not regarded so by many, but every soul is precious. It has its own integrity, own, and when it incorporates with the mind, it's absolutely self-sufficient entity, and it no longer has any use for this veil of tears that you call existence here. Moves on to higher things, better things.
Okay.
With others.
Rusty, yep. Thank you for the call. I want to get to one of the flash messages before we hit this break that's coming up. And let's see. Peter in Columbia asks, what insights can you share about the true nature and purpose of alien abductions and alien implants?
All right.
Yeah, go ahead.
There were alien abductions, and some were done by ETs some time ago. But ETs do preliminary, like at Kolaris, they do preliminary, they want to know about mankind. They want to know, and it doesn't take continued year after year or even week after week abductions to get what they need to know or want to know. I would say that most, by far, of the abductions that are occurring today are instrumented by military intelligence and They operate under a cloak and cover of EB or alien abduction.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Caller, hang on. We're going to do these flash messages, so you may be there a little bit. We have a flash message from Blue in Australia. He's got three questions, and let me just get a yes or no to the first one. Does MJ-12 have extraterrestrials on the board? Are you with me, James?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Does MJ-12 have extraterrestrials on the board?
I would doubt that. I think that they probably carry on some form of transcommunication, but that comes from exchanges that have many intercedent people in between the
okay. Well, we're going to have to really rush through these because we have a caller on hold here. How do the authorities make crashed flying saucers disappear? Where do they go?
They go to laboratories that are in deep underground facilities. Wright-Patterson isn't the only one. It isn't the one that's being utilized right now to that much extent. Groom Lake has some. Not far from where I live has some. There are probably several in Australia. There's probably two or three that are on the continent, European continent.
All right. Are the objects near the sun powered by magnetic or nuclear energy?
They operate on the same principle the sun does.
Okay. Also, do the souls in these objects travel through dimensional transportation to planets?
They don't want to leave.
Okay. Now we've got Craig in the United Kingdom.
There's things that happen involving them, but it's minuscule.
Okay. Craig in the United Kingdom wants to know, how far do you think human history goes back here on Earth? Millions or billions of years? And he wants me to ask you if we are the original race of this planet.
No.
No, we're not the original race.
No.
All right, so...
We didn't even evolve here.
Okay. So, how far back does it go, human history? Millions or billions of years?
Our history on this planet goes back 300,000 years.
Okay. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi. I got two questions for your guests. I want you, you could help me out here, because I'm kind of drawing a blank. How many genes is it that we have that are foreign and aren't working?
Well, there's 220, we have 223 genes that have no evolutionary predecessors on this planet.
Yeah, I was wondering, could he answer why that is?
Okay, Terry, you're talking on top of James. James, you said something?
Is he asking me how many genes we have that don't express phenotype?
I don't know. What are you asking, Terry?
Just what them, does he know what them genes are, why we got them, why they don't seem to be doing anything?
Okay.
Oh, Those genes are there to meet unanticipated environmental stress to give options for adaption.
Okay, and my second question is, why, on the average, we use only 10% of our brain?
Because you're split. You have a split consciousness. If you had a unified consciousness, you'd use vastly a lot more. You would have a feature of moral determination that would not allow the ambivalence you have. You would be restored.
And is this done on purpose, or just way we've evolved so far?
It was done to enslave you.
Who did it?
You're the only people that can be hypnotized, and you look upon that as just like you look upon ambivalence and just the dichotomy and all this. You sublimate it.
Who did it to us?
If you the people that built the underground halls on Mars did it to you.
So are these the people that are referred to in the Sumerian texts as the Anunnaki?
They're known by another name.
Can you share it with us?
Thruj.
Say it again.
Thruj.
Thruj. Okay. Now, you said we go back 300,000 years, and we did not originate here. Where did we originate?
We originated in a system of two suns, four moons, to the planet, and we had an atmosphere heavy in helium. Helium was our respirant.
Do you know the name of this place?
It would be, I can tell you what the name means, just like I can tell you what my name means, but to try to, you know, it's very hard to say these. I mean, they're not, they haven't been spoken in so long that it's difficult to how to think about how to utter them.
Well, what does the name mean?
Place of Peace. Your planet was called Place of Peace.
And so we were transported here and transplanted here 300,000 plus years ago.
Well, you came here 300,000 years ago, but it wasn't the Earth you came to, it was Mars.
I see. So we originally inhabited Mars, and Mars, I guess, at that time was much more like Earth is today.
Yeah, and the big secret there is it's because Mars had Earth's moon.
Whoa. And right as we are running out of time, you drop another bomb on us. You're going to have to come back and talk with us again. Can you come back and talk to us about that?
You bet.
Okay. Outstanding. Stay on the line with me for a moment. Wow. Well, folks, like I said, on this show, you're going to get information that perhaps you will, and in this case, I know you're not going to get it elsewhere because at this point, James has decided that he will talk with the Kevin Smith Show, and that's it. And that may change in the future. I don't know, but that's his decision right now. So we'll get him back to talk with us about our moon being around Mars and our ancestors being on Mars. But we've run out of time for this evening. Don't forget, if you haven't subscribed to the K-Files, please subscribe to the K-Files. It's free. I don't know what else I can do to get you out of the darkness and out of the mushroom diet. It's free. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.